So today I did have something I thought would be effective for the message in terms of the a photo here, a little prop. I don't usually do props, but I think you'll see how it ties in here. So recently Jane and I were able to go away for a 20th anniversary trip. We went to Maui, and the condo we stayed at did not have an ocean view. I am a sucker for an ocean view. But instead, we had a beautiful view of the West Maui Mountains. So immediately, that mountain grabbed our attention. Each morning, we sat facing that mountain on our little balcony. And the sun would eventually crack over the top of the mountain. We sat there with our coffee, handled our morning prayers. It was a perfect backdrop to set the focus for our day. Quickly, we noticed that a large cloud had established permanent residence sitting on top of the mountain. And it would wane and it would build. You know, in the morning, it might be just a little flutter there, and or sometimes a little stronger. And then in the afternoon, it would build. And then we'd often see maybe a little rain coming down the mountain at times. Sometimes it would reach us, sometimes it wouldn't. So I couldn't help but to think about ancient Israel at Sinai with this cloud and how God showed his presence to them in the form of a cloud. The cloud sat on the mountain where God gave the Ten Commandments. The cloud rested on the tabernacle when he was present there. And the cloud led the people's movement for 40 years in the wilderness. On our trip, the cloud became a symbol of God's constant presence in our lives. It illustrated the need for us to connect with God first thing each morning. It was also a constant reminder of our accountability to God's presence in our lives. Do you and I each recognize God's presence in our lives? Do we start our day with that understanding, or from that point of understanding? Do we relate to him as being so near to us as a cloud on top of a mountain that encompasses our entire landscape? Do we invite him in daily and look to him for our daily direction? Are we accountable to him as if we are constantly in his view? Brethren, you and I are each living our lives at the foot of God's mountain. He is just as present in our lives as he was in the lives of ancient Israel, in the form of a pillar of cloud. Since God is so near to us, what are his expectations of us as we live in his presence? Today I'd like to examine the topic of God's presence in our lives. Specifically, I'd like to examine the expectations God has for us as a result of living in his presence. Now the people at home can see again. Let's begin by seeing God's use of a cloud for ancient Israel and seeing his first expectation for the people in his presence. God expects us to respect his presence and authority in our lives. Turn with me, if you would, to Exodus 24, verse 3. Exodus 24, verse 3. If you recall in Exodus 19, we just read the passage here for Pentecost. Mr. Bradford read it to us. God made his presence known loud and clear to the 12 tribes of Israel that day from the foot of from Mount Sinai. He had lightning, thunder, loud trumpet blasts, thick cloud which covered the mountain, and they saw the Lord descend onto the mountain with fire. The mountain burned, if you recall, with fire, and created thick smoke. Then in chapter 24, the people agreed to the law and entered into a covenant or a pledge with God. Let's pick up in Exodus 24, verse 3. So Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments. And all the people answered with one voice and said, "All the words which the Lord has said we will do." And Moses wrote all the words of the Lord. And he rose early in the morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain and 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel. Then he sent young men of the children of Israel who offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen to the Lord. And Moses took half the blood from the oxen offering and put it in basins, and then half the blood he sprinkled on the altar. And of course, we know blood is a key component to a covenant. Then, verse 7, then he took the book of the covenant and read in the hearing of the people. And they said, "All that the Lord has said, we will do and be obedient." And Moses took the blood, sprinkled it on the people, and said, "This is the blood of the covenant, which the Lord has made with you according to all these words." Then Moses went up, and also Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel. And they saw the God of Israel. And there was under his feet, as it were, a paved work of sapphire stone. And it was like the very heavens in its clarity. But on the nobles of the children of Israel, he did not lay his hand. So they saw God, and they ate and drank. Let's drop down to verse 15. Then Moses went up into the mountain, and a cloud covered the mountain. And now the glory of the Lord rested on Mount Sinai and covered it for 6 days. So it would have been a setting similar to this, except more fire and more prominent and probably a much higher mountain and probably a much more dramatic cloud. The sight of the glory of the Lord was like a consuming fire on the top of the mountain in the eyes of the children of Israel. So Moses went into the midst of the cloud and went up into the mountain. And Moses was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. So here the 70 elders, Aaron and his two oldest sons, saw God. They actually got to eat a meal down the mountain in the view of God there. Then Moses went up the mountain in the full view of Israel. There was no doubt of God's presence there. The people had willingly entered into a covenant with God. They agreed to obey God and do as he said. However, as we know, the children of Israel quickly corrupted themselves in sins of idolatry and licentiousness with the golden calf. How had people so quickly abandoned the promises that they had made to God? Had they lost respect for God's power? Had the lightning and the thunder and the fire and trumpets and the voice of God been forgotten so quickly? It's fascinating that the visibility of God's power and his presence looming above the people in the form of the cloud was so quickly forgotten or ignored. They took God's presence for granted. They had lost respect for God's power and authority. They broke the covenant, their agreement that they had made with God, to which they had just committed. And they gave their affection to another god, small g, a calf god. That calf god did not require them to change their behavior. It did not require them to obey. That calf god allowed them to do what they wanted to do and to put their own desires ahead of God. Could the same thing happen to us? Are the promises that we made to God in Christ when we accepted Christ's spilled blood as our sacrifice kept at the top of our minds? Do we go about our daily lives with that respect toward God? Or have we allowed ourselves to maybe underappreciate His power and His authority and His presence in our lives? Are we allowing the pursuit of our own desires to become our authority and act as our God, small g? If we're not careful, we can allow our respect and appreciation for God, His presence, and His authority in our lives to wane. Maintaining respect for God and His authority and presence is the first expectation that God has for us. Let's see more of this expectation to respect God's presence and authority in our lives by turning to Deuteronomy 4, verse 35. Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 35. Earlier in the chapter, Moses asks the question in verse 7, "For what great nation is there that has God so near to it as the Lord our God is to us, for whatever reason we may call upon Him?" Do we truly understand how close God is to us? Do we truly understand that He's available and ready to hear from us anytime we want to approach? Over time, we can take that proximity for granted. Let's look at what else Moses wants us to understand here in regard to God's nearness to us. Verse 35 of chapter 4, Deuteronomy. "To you it was shown that you might know that the Lord Himself is God. There is none other besides Him. Out of heaven He lets you hear His voice, that He might instruct you. On earth He showed you His great fire, and you heard His words out of the midst of the fire. And because He loved your fathers, therefore He chose their descendants after them." This kind of reminds me here of all of us who are second-generation Christians. Because He loved our fathers, He chose us. So that it's kind of sobering in that regard. "And He brought you out of Egypt with His presence, with His mighty power, driving out from before you nations greater and mightier than you to bring you in, to give you their land as an inheritance as it is this day. Therefore, know this day and consider it in your heart that the Lord Himself is God in heaven above and on the earth beneath, and there is no other. You shall therefore keep His statutes and His commandments, which I command you today, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, and that you may prolong your days in the land which the Lord your God is giving you for all time." God has the expectation that we should respect His power and authority. He expects us to recognize His presence and proximity to us. He is giving us His instruction, and He desires us to be present. He desires to be present and involved in our lives. However, He does want obedience. Obedience leads us to prolonged days in His land for all time. And that's an eternity statement for us. The second expectation that God has for us in regard to living in His presence is to keep watch for His direction in leading our lives. Let's see this by turning to Numbers 9, verse 15. Numbers chapter 9, verse 15. And we'll see that the cloud was the symbol by which God ordered the movement and direction of the children of Israel. Numbers 9, verse 15. "Now on the day that the tabernacle was raised up, the cloud covered the tabernacle, the tent of the testimony, from evening until morning. It was above the tabernacle like the appearance of fire." So here again, God's presence is clear to the people that were living there. Verse 16, "So it was always, the cloud covered it by day and the appearance of fire by night. Whenever the cloud was taken up from above the tabernacle, After that, the children of Israel would journey, and in the place where the cloud settled, there the children of Israel would pitch their tents. At the command of the Lord, the children of Israel would journey, and at the command of the Lord, they would camp. As long as the cloud stayed above the tabernacle, they remained encamped. Even when the cloud continued long, many days above the tabernacle, the children of Israel kept the charge of the Lord. And notice that, we'll look at that in a minute. Kept the charge of the Lord and did not journey. So it was when the cloud was above the tabernacle a few days, according to the command of the Lord, they would remain encamped. And according to the command of the Lord, they would journey. So it was when the cloud remained only from evening until morning, when the cloud was taken up in the morning, then they would journey, whether by day or by night. Whenever the cloud was taken up, they would journey. Whether it was 2 days, a month, or a year that the cloud remained above the tabernacle, the children of Israel would remain encamped and not journey. But when it was taken up, they would journey. At the command of the Lord, they remained encamped, and at the command of the Lord, they journeyed. They kept the charge of the Lord, and at the command of the Lord by the hand of Moses. So let's notice two things here. First, in verse 19, it says Israel kept the charge of the Lord. The Hebrew word for, according to Strong's Concordance, means to watch. So they had to watch where that cloud was. They had to orientate themselves on a daily basis to what's the cloud doing? Are we staying here today? Are we moving? Did the cloud move in the middle of the night? Do we need to catch up to the cloud? It's what a sentry or guard would do to keep watch. God was teaching Israel to look to Him for their direction constantly. God built in them the habit of starting their day and ending their day locating that cloud. They were being trained to be mindful of where God was in their lives and what He was doing. Secondly, we notice the statement, at the command of the Lord. Their movement and direction in life was not their own to make. They were learning that it was by God's command they would move. God was in charge of the direction of their lives. If they did not yield themselves to God's command, then their lives would be off course. They would never find the promised land. There was no map they could buy to get to the promised land. They did not have independent movement. Their day-to-day survival, as well as their long-term survival as a nation, depended on God's command and direction. So again, I'll ask the question, what about us? Do we have the habit of starting our day by locating God? Do we check in first thing with Him in the morning to watch for His direction in our lives? Do we base our movements and decisions in life by His command? If we have questions or uncertainty about the course or the direction of our lives, we may have lost our watch or our charge for Him. We may need to get in the habit of beginning and ending our day by looking for the cloud. Keeping watch on God and following His command in our lives is the second expectation God has for us living in His presence. The third expectation God has for us living in His presence is that His presence in our lives should be a deterrent for us from sin. Let's see this by turning to Numbers 25, verse 1. Numbers chapter 25, verse 1. The children of Israel were passing through an area where the Moabites lived, and the Moabites worshipped a false god called Baal-peor. Baal, or some say Baal, means Lord, and Peor was the mountain on which that god was worshipped. So he had his own mountain there. Here Israel was encamped in the shadow of that mountain. So that mountain didn't have a cloud on it, but it had a tabernacle that had a cloud on it. So God's presence would have still been there for his people. Verse 1, Numbers 25. Now Israel remained in Acacia Grove, and the people began to commit harlotry with the women of Moab. They invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So Israel was joined to Baal Peor, and the anger of the Lord was aroused against Israel. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Take all the leaders of the people and hang the offenders before the Lord out in the sun, that the fierce anger of the Lord may turn away from Israel." So first they were to be killed, then they were to be hung up. Verse 5, "So Moses said to the judges of Israel, 'Every one of you kill his men who were joined to Baal of Peor.' And indeed, one of the children of Israel came and presented to his brethren." So he was showing off now to his family. He had found a Midianite woman in the sight of Moses and in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel who were weeping at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. So picture this. People are weeping at the tabernacle because people they know were being killed because there were people engaging in licentiousness with these Moabite women. So here in this sight, people crying at the tabernacle, here's this young guy showing off this girl he just found. Hey, look who I have here. Verse 7. "Now when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, saw it, he rose from among the congregation and took a javelin in his hand." And he took care of business there. We won't go into it any further. "But the people who died in the plague were 24,000 that day." So, painting this scene fully, not only were God's people worshiping a false god, they were worshiping a false god in a way that was doubly sinful and offensive to God. The tabernacle was there, as I said, a cloud would have been above the tabernacle. God's presence was there, but it was no longer deterring sin. The cloud had only become scenery to some that lived there. Moses also was there in plain sight. Right in front of the leader, this happened. Additionally, all saw that people were being killed for their sin. There were consequences already being shown for what was going on. God's presence should have served as a deterrent to sin. After all of this was happening in the plain sight of God. But God's presence and the consequences of sin were not enough to deter that young man. It's easy for us to forget that we are in God's plain sight because we do not see a symbol of his presence constantly around us. However, he is there, and he does not miss anything. He knows what we are doing and what we are thinking. God's presence in our lives should deter us from sin. It is easy for us to ignore that presence at times, isn't it? When we are led by our own emotions or our hurts or desires, it has to be real to us that God is present. He is so present that he dwells in us through his Spirit. We have to consider this throughout the course of our day. God does not want us to carry on like that young Israelite man, thinking God is not paying attention to us. He wants his presence near us and in us to encourage us to righteousness and holiness. God's expectation is that his presence in our lives should deter us from sin. Accountability is closely related to deterrence from sin. Accountability is the fourth expectation God has for us in his presence. This example of accountability is shown through God's presence in the form of the cloud. Let's see this in Numbers 12, verse 1. Numbers chapter 12, in verse 1. In chapter 11, the Israelites had complained to God about their lack of meat. They missed some things in their diet out in the wilderness. And here we even see Moses' own brother and sister complaining and questioning maybe why they don't have a bigger role. Numbers 12, verse 1. Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. So they said, "Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also?" And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very humble, more than all men who were on the face of the earth. Suddenly the Lord said to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, "Come out, you three, to the tabernacle of meeting." So the three came out. You would have to think, I'm being called out to an important meeting here with God. I wonder what that's all about. Verse 5, then the Lord came down in the pillar of cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam, and they both went forward. Then he said, "Hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak to him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. I speak with him face to face, even plainly, and not in dark sayings. And he sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" So the anger of the Lord was aroused against them, and he departed. Verse 10, and when the cloud departed from above the tabernacle, suddenly Miriam became leprous, as white as snow. Then Aaron turned toward Miriam, and there she was, a leper. So Aaron said to Moses, "Oh, my Lord, please do not lay this sin on us, in which we have done foolishly and in which we have sinned." So there's an acknowledgement there. Accountability is beginning. Verse 13. So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, "Please heal her, O God, I pray." Then the Lord said to Moses, "If her father had but spit in her face, would she not have shamed? And would she not be shamed 7 days?" So this is interesting here, because a couple of the commentaries go into this as far as what this is talking about here. I guess if you had an insolent child, there was a practice where spitting in their face or spitting on the ground in front of them was a way to say, "I am had it to here with you in your behavior." So that was a custom evidently that was there. Okay, continuing in verse 14. "Let her be shut out of the camp 7 days, and afterward she may be received again." So Miriam was shut out of the camp 7 days, and the people did not journey till Miriam was brought in again. So this was a public shaming, if you will, and also it was from her uncleanness because she had leprosy for a time there before she was healed. So she had to be out of the camp. So God was a witness to Miriam and Aaron, and them elevating themselves. They were envious of their brother's place. They thought maybe they should have had a bigger role. And God's anger was kindled against them. They were immediately held accountable to God. It's bad enough when you get called on the carpet by maybe an employer, or maybe a brother or sister, or maybe a parent. When you get called to that level of accountability, "Come here now." Imagine what being called out to accountability felt like for Miriam and Aaron. In this case, God brought Miriam and Aaron's sin to light by confronting them directly. They recognized their sin once God had held them accountable through confrontation. They then went to Moses to ask God for mercy. In our case, Paul says that if we judge ourselves, we will not be judged. God wants us to recognize his presence and for us to respond to that presence and that authority directly and go to Him directly for forgiveness when we see our own faults. We need to have this type of individual accountability with God. We should feel the weight of separation from God when we sin and desire to be made one with Him again through repentance. Are we taking regular inventory of sin? Is that something we think about on a daily basis? Are we looking back on the previous day with our thoughts, or in the morning, thinking back on the day before about our thoughts and our actions and maybe our attitude and maybe what we said and everything we did? If we are, then, and we're addressing those flaws and errors with God, then we're walking humbly and we're walking accountably with God. If it's been a while since we've taken a good inventory, then we are at risk of God needing to act in our lives in order to bring us to accountability. That might take a long time, but God wants us to be there with Him in His kingdom. So ultimately, He's going to want to bring us to accountability if we're not bringing ourselves to accountability. So we don't want to put off self-judgment. Let's see another example of God requiring accountability in His presence. Please turn to Numbers 14, verse 20. Numbers chapter 14, verse 20. Just prior to our verse, the spies had just given their false report about the promised land, and the Israelites wanted to replace Moses. They wanted a new leader and go back to Egypt. God had had enough of their rebellion, and He was ready to kill that generation right there, and Moses had to talk them out of it. Moses beseeched Him, and using a method to say, God, this is going to be defaming to You if You do this to these people, because the Egyptians are going to talk. And so Moses listened to him. Verse 20 of Numbers 14. Then the Lord said, I have pardoned according to Your word, but truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord. Because all these men who have seen My glory and the signs which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have put Me to the test now these 10 times, and have not heeded My voice, they certainly shall not see the land of which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who rejected Me see it. The Israelites put God to the test here. It says 10 times. They were rejecting God's direction in their lives. They did not trust Him to go into the land where He was leading them. They consistently were not heeding His voice. Their actions and words were rejecting God's authority and presence. Rejecting God's direction and not obeying His voice caused all but the young generation to miss out on the promised land. Their actions had long-term consequences. God may forgive when we come to Him, but there are certainly consequences that He allows to remain in force. If we continue to reject God's voice and ignore His direction, we might test God to a point that is too far for Him. If we're not careful and accountable, we risk long-term consequences. We risk being rejected from reaching His promised land that He's offering us. God's presence requires accountability. God's presence deters us from sin and leads us to accountability. And once we are fully accountable to God, we receive God's manifold mercy. The fifth expectation God has for us regarding His presence in our lives is that after we fail and after we return to Him, we should receive His mercy. Let's see this by turning to Nehemiah 9, verse 12. Nehemiah chapter 9, verse 12. Here the nation of Judah has returned from captivity in Babylon. The temple was rebuilt, and Ezra the priest was reading the law, and the law was something they weren't that familiar with because they hadn't had it for a long time. They were fasting, and they were drawing nearer to God, repentant for the sins which had led the nation into captivity. Nehemiah 9:12. Moreover, you, referring to God here, led them by day with a cloudy pillar and by night with a pillar of fire to give them light on the road which they should travel. You came down also on Mount Sinai and spoke with them from heaven and gave them just ordinances and true laws, good statutes and commandments. You made known to them your holy Sabbath and commanded them precepts, statutes, and laws by the hand of Moses, your servant. You gave them bread from heaven for their hunger and brought them water out of the rock for their thirst and told them to go in to possess the land which you had sworn to give them. But they and our fathers acted proudly, hardened their necks, and did not heed your commandments. They refused to obey, and they were not mindful of your wonders that you did among them. But they hardened their necks, and in their rebellion they appointed a leader to return to their bondage. But you are God, ready to pardon, gracious and merciful, slow to anger, abundant in kindness, and did not forsake them, even when they made a molded calf for themselves and said, "This is your God that brought you out of Egypt," and worked great provocations. Yet in your manifold mercies, you did not forsake them in the wilderness. The pillar of the cloud did not depart from them by day to lead them on the road, nor did the pillar of fire by night to show them light and the way to go. You also gave your good spirit to instruct them and did not withhold your manna from their mouth and gave them water for their thirst. 40 years you sustained them in the wilderness. They lacked nothing. Their clothes did not wear out and their feet did not swell. When we acknowledge our sin to God and when we strive to obey Him and when we seek His forgiveness, He gives us manifold mercies. He continues to be present in our lives. He continues to be there for us, waiting for us to return to Him. God desires to give us this mercy. He is patient and forbearing. He just wants us to desire to be led. Once we seek God's mercy and desire to be led, God's next expectation in regard to living in His presence is that He desires us to develop as close of a relationship with Him as He has with us. Let's turn to Psalm 139, verse 1, and let's look at this concept, and let's see David describe his relationship with God. It's interesting here what we learn about God's relationship with us in this verse, or in these verses. Psalm 139, verse 1. He shows us here that God has an intimate knowledge of who David was. God has a close relationship with David, and David shows that he desires to develop that same closeness with God. Psalm 139, 1. For the chief musician, a psalm of David, O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thought from afar. You comprehend my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. Can you imagine that? Every word that's on our tongue, God is aware of it. You have hedged me behind and before and laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascended into heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. Let's drop down to verse 17. How precious also are your thoughts to me, O God. How great is the sum of them. If I should count them, they would be more in number than the sand. When I awake, I am still with you. Let's drop down to verse 23. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, and know my anxieties or his innermost thoughts. And see if there is any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Here we see that God has a complete understanding of who David was. God knew his words, his actions, and his thoughts. David wanted to know all things, or David wanted God to know all things about himself. And he wanted to also know God's thoughts. He wanted to spend time thinking about what God's actions are and thoughts and ways. He desired to know and understand God in that way. And David spent a lot of time thinking about God's ways. David also wants God to complete the work in him, to reveal any things about himself that he wasn't seeing so that he could be led in the way, and wanted that wickedness, if it was there, that he wasn't seeing removed. This is the closeness we need to desire with God. It's God's expectation for us to develop as close a relationship with him as he has with us. The seventh and final expectation God has regarding us living in his presence is that it is not enough to just reside in his presence. Proximity to God is not a relationship with God. Being near God is not the same thing as being close to God. Let's see this by turning to Luke 13, verse 23. Luke chapter 13, verse 23. Then one said to him, Lord, are there few who are saved? And he said to them, strive to enter through the narrow gate. For many, I say to you, will seek to enter and will not be able. When once the master of the house has risen up and shut the door, and you begin to stand outside and knock at the door, saying, Lord, Lord, open for us. And he will answer and say to you, I do not know you. Where you are from. Then you will begin to say, we ate and drank in your presence, and you taught in our streets. But he will say, I tell you, I do not know you, where you are from. Depart from me, all you workers of iniquity. Jesus Christ was fully aware of who these people are. We just read that he knows every word that comes off of our lips. So he knew them, and he showed that by saying that they were workers of iniquity. He knows they're rising up. When Christ says, I do not know you, he means that they do not have a relationship with him. Just because someone has proximity to God does not mean that they have a relationship with God. Over decades, many people have attended the Church of God. They've been baptized. They've had proximity to where God is and what he's doing. However, being in God's presence and hearing God's teaching is not all that's required. God has an expectation that it's not enough to merely be in his presence. God desires more. He wants us to know him and be close to him. That closeness involves what David described. that we desire to know God's thoughts and that we seek His ways. We've looked at 7 expectations that God has for us as a result of living in His presence. He desires to maintain respect. He desires us to maintain respect for His authority and presence. He expects us to start and end our day by watching for His movement and direction in our lives. He expects that His presence in our lives should help deter us from sin. He expects that His presence requires us to be fully accountable to Him. God has the expectation that after we fail, that we return to Him and receive His mercies. He has the expectation that we will desire to develop as close a relationship to Him as He has with us. Finally, His expectation is that it's not enough to just be in His presence. He expects us to know Him by internalizing and practicing His ways. Brethren, let's picture God's presence in our lives as a mountain towering over us with a giant pillar of cloud. And that cloud is above us every day. It's above when we wake up, and it's above when we lay down. The cloud of God's presence is here with us now. This week, as we live through our days, let's picture that cloud of God's presence with us. Let's not ignore His presence. Let's engage His presence fully. Let's look to God for our movement and direction. And let's God lead our lives.